Good morning. It's Friday, June 27th. I'm Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, remembering Minnesota lawmaker Melissa Hortman. What happened when ICE agents targeted Iranian Christian asylum seekers? And Anna Wintour ends her decades-long run as the editor-in-chief of Vogue. But first, the Supreme Court issued a flurry of opinions to end its term this year, leaving many of its most consequential cases to the end. Let's start with the birthright citizenship case. In a 6-3 ruling, the conservative majority court found that federal judges likely exceeded the authority that Congress has granted them when they issued temporary nationwide pauses on President Trump's order ending birthright citizenship. The decision has major implications for the ability of district court judges to pause federal actions for the whole country using nationwide injunctions. Notably, the justices said judges can only grant relief to the parties who brought a particular lawsuit and cannot extend their decision to protect sweeping groups of people unless they convert a suit into a class action. Justice Amy Coney Barrett wrote, quote, "When a court concludes that the executive branch has acted unlawfully, the answer is not for the court to exceed its power to." In a rare move, Justice Sonia Sotomayor read her dissenting opinion aloud from the bench, taking nearly 20 minutes. The Supreme Court did not weigh in on the constitutionality of the executive order calling to end birthright citizenship, a right that's been in the Constitution for more than 150 years. This decision means the court will allow President Trump to seek to end birthright citizenship in some parts of the country while legal challenges continue in a number of states. President Trump posted to social media shortly after, calling it a giant win and claiming incorrectly that the ruling had to do with the issue of birthright citizenship itself. In another 6-3 ruling, the Supreme Court sided with a group of parents in Maryland who sought to remove their children from public school lessons that featured LGBTQ+ themed books. By reversing lower court rulings on the matter, the Supreme Court determined that schools likely cannot require elementary school children to be in lessons involving books that their parents might have a religious objection toward. The court also decided to uphold part of the Affordable Care Act that requires health plans to cover preventative care such as cancer screenings, and it rejected a challenge to an FCC program that subsidizes phone and internet services in underserved parts of the country. It was a big day for SCOTUS. You can read more analysis on the Apple News app. Lawmaker Melissa Hortman, along with her husband Mark and their golden retriever Gilbert, will lie in state today at the Minnesota State Capitol. A private funeral will be held tomorrow that will also be live streamed. The Minnesota House Speaker Emerita and her husband were assassinated earlier this month in their home. Their dog was severely injured in the attack and later euthanized. The suspected gunman also attacked Democratic State Senator John Hoffman and his wife, who were both wounded but survived. Hortman was known as a principled legislator and a tough negotiator, an unusually generous and skilled public servant. In her personal time, she led Girl Scout troops and Sunday school classes and volunteered with a group that trained service dogs. In the days and weeks since the attack, Minnesota lawmakers have expressed their grief and shared stories about their friend and colleague. Here's U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar, who represents Minnesota and came up in local politics with Hortman, speaking from the Senate floor.
Melissa was one of the most consequential speakers in the history of our state. She knew no limits in terms of trying to get people together, trying to get things done. And while I cannot believe she is gone, Minnesotans will be feeling the impact of her leadership forever.
Representative Athena Hollis, Hortman's colleague in the Minnesota Democratic former Labor Party, told a local CBS affiliate how Hortman mentored a whole generation of young people and inspired them to become public servants.
I mean, I got the ability to see how the sausage was made, and it gave me a whole new perspective on what legislating and leading was actually about. And she didn't have to have me in those rooms. And honestly, I didn't have a lot to contribute, especially when I first started. But she knew that it was important to bring up new leaders.
As House Speaker at the start of the 2023 legislative session, she pushed through several major pieces of legislation. Patrick Kulikin, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, told us just how gifted Hortman was as a politician.
They created the biggest child tax credit in the country, free lunch, universal free meals for K-12 students. They restored the vote to felons who are no longer incarcerated. They created driver's licenses for undocumented people. They increased education, human services spending. They raised taxes in the metro area for housing and transportation. They codified abortion rights. They legalized marijuana. It's an incredible record of legislative achievement.
And despite policy disagreements, she earned the respect of her colleagues on the other side of the aisle. Here's Republican Congressman Tom Emmer speaking on the U.S. House floor.
While we may have disagreed on policy, Melissa was a great colleague who fearlessly fought for what she believed in, and she devotedly served the people of Minnesota.
He went on to say,
as Speaker of the Minnesota House, she led with integrity and fostered bipartisan collaboration, even during the most challenging times in our state.
Beyond her legislative accomplishments, Kulikin said Hortman will also be remembered for how she treated people.
When she becomes Speaker of the House, she decides that she's going to take the health and safety of everyone more seriously than it had been. And specifically, she's going to stop debates at midnight. Everyone knew that this was not just unhealthy, but potentially hazardous because you have both members and staff out on the roads in the middle of the night after they've had this extraordinarily long day of work, and someone was going to get hurt in a car wreck or some other way. And so she just said, we're not going to go past midnight anymore. And I think everybody appreciated that.
Today, Hortman becomes the first woman to lie in state at the Capitol, joining a small and distinguished group of fewer than 20 Minnesotans who've been given that honor for their extraordinary public service. In a statement, her and Mark's children, Sophie and Colin Hortman, called on people to honor their parents' legacy by, quote, doing something, whether big or small, to make our community just a little better for someone else. And now to immigration policy, as some high-profile cases involving Iranians in America have been emerging. Just a heads up, some of the tape that we're about to play might be distressing to hear. First to L.A., where a woman appeared to suffer a panic attack as ICE agents came to their home initially looking for her husband. The couple are Christian asylum seekers who say they came to the United States to flee religious persecution in Iran. They entered the country last October using the CBP One mobile app launched by the Biden administration to streamline asylum claims. The Trump administration has since scrapped that program, and ICE agents have been pursuing those already in the country and either using or hoping to use the CBP One route. As the ICE agents, most with covered faces, arrested her husband and appeared to restrain her, their pastor was there to film the incident.
Why are you doing this?
It's no longer valid anymore. That's why.
Why? Can I have his stuff?
That first voice you hear is Ara Torossian, the couple's pastor and a U.S.-Iranian citizen. As the video continues, you can hear her convulsing as the panic attack sets in.
Let him go! She's mad! Let her go! Let her go!
You don't stay there, you're going to be arrested for
interference. She's sick! She's sick!
You're going to be arrested for
interference. She's sick! I'm here! She's sick!
Okay, stay there.
She's mad! Call 911! Call 911, she's mad!
The woman was eventually taken to a nearby hospital for treatment, where anti-detention protesters had already gathered. But because she was now under federal custody, she had to be accompanied by ICE agents.
And that created a little bit of a kerfuffle on the outside with the protesters, with the activists. LAPD was called to the scene.
That's Alicia Victoria Lozano from NBC, who's been covering this story from L.A. She says the couple remain in federal custody and their future is now uncertain, with the CBP One path no longer an option. The incident happened in an area with a large Iranian population, so much so that it's been nicknamed Tehrangeles. A lot of those people are Christians who came to the United States after the Iranian Revolution.
So now you have this community who once was coming to Los Angeles to join their cousins and their friends and their relatives. Now they are living in fear as well because the freedom that was granted to their relatives is no longer available to them.
Lozano has learned about 8 other cases similar to this one. And in Arizona, an Iranian asylum seeker who was living in the U.S. on a work permit is on a hunger strike after being detained. A federal judge just granted permission to allow officials to begin force feeding. And federal agents revealed they recently arrested 11 Iranian individuals with either criminal records or alleged terrorist links.
So that is the other complicated side of this coin. And anybody would have said, OK, that's exactly who we are OK getting, you know, behind bars, going back to whatever country they came from. So all of those 11 had demonstrated histories of violent history. However, the ones here in Los Angeles, none of them do. Those were all asylum seekers.
It's unclear whether deportation arrests of Iranians have actually gone up since the recent conflict broke out, or if we're just seeing more of these cases in the news now. But certainly for these communities, the stakes of having to return to Iran will feel a lot higher. Before we let you go, a few other stories we're following. A new study released from the Pew Research Center found that even if everyone had come out to vote in 2024, President Trump still would have won the election. The study, based on a survey with 9,000 adult U.S. citizens and official voting records, dispels the idea that Democrats and Kamala Harris lost because of low turnout. Instead, the data shows that Trump was able to build a diverse coalition with major gains among Hispanic, Asian, Black, and young voters, groups that are key for Democratic victories. In fact, nearly half of Hispanic voters supported Trump, 48% in 2024. Asian support also grew, with 40% voting for Trump in 2024 compared to 30% in 2020, and 15% of Black voters supported Trump compared to 8% in 2020, giving Trump the largest share of Black voters for a Republican candidate in decades. In other news, Anna Wintour is stepping down as the editor-in-chief of Vogue magazine. She's been in charge of the iconic fashion Bible for 37 years, shaping the monthly newsstand staple into the cultural touchstone it is today. It's widely believed that Wintour and her sharp personality inspired The Devil Wears Prada, a book written by one of her former assistants that was later made into a movie starring Meryl Streep and Anne Hathaway. Wintour has never confirmed the movie is about her, but when it came out in 2006, she showed up to the premiere wearing Prada. Wintour will stay on as the magazine's global editorial director and the global chief content officer of Condé Nast, the media company that owns Vogue and more than a dozen other lifestyle magazines. Her replacement has not yet been named. And last thing, let me tell you what's been going on Apple News in Conversation. I sat down with the creators of the new Apple original film F1 the Movie, out today, starring Brad Pitt and Damson Idris. 7-time F1 world champion Lewis Hamilton served as a producer.
3 laps. 3 laps is a lifetime.
I recently spoke with director Joseph Kosinski and producer Jerry Bruckheimer. The two previously teamed up for Top Gun Maverick, and like that movie, F1 the Movie is all about bringing the speed and intensity of the real-life experience to the big screen. Kosinski told me the actors spent months training to handle the extreme G-forces drivers feel on the track.
In Top Gun, we talked about Gs, which are kind of vertical, pushing you down into your seat, you know, and pulling the blood out of your brain and make you unconscious. In Formula One, the G's are side to side, left to right, and forward when you brake. And when you're pulling 5 G's in a left to right hand turn, the strain on your body and your neck to hold your head upright is enormous. And most people, after 2 laps in a Formula One car, they would be exhausted, not be able to hold their head upright anymore. And that's something that's very hard to train for. So Brad and Damson just had to do hundreds and hundreds of laps to physically train themselves to actually be able to sustain driving these cars.
The filmmakers also embedded in a real F1 season. They built garages alongside the actual teams and filmed at live races. Bruckheimer described how some of those shots were captured.
What Joe asked Apple to do, he said, I want to take your camera from your phone. I want you to enhance it for me, and I want you to be able to put it on our cars. But what happened is he was able to take two of those cameras, which they developed, and put them on two of the actual F1 cars during every race. So some of the footage that you're seeing is actually in a race.
F1, the movie, is out in theaters today. If you're listening in the news app right now, my conversation with Joseph Kosinski and Jerry Bruckheimer is queued up to play for you next. Enjoy the weekend, and I'll be back with the news on Monday.